Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Wednesday night of Sports Conversation on the Fighting Network. And, of course, we really look forward to tonight's show. We've got a great, great list of guests. Frank Cattle, our exec producer, though, will jump in first tonight because a lot of things happening, as everybody knows, with the hurricane and all the problems Florida's had. And, Frank, you're right in the center of it, and I know you want to have a couple of dedications before we start the show.
Yes, I want to dedicate this show to the wonderful people of Southwest Florida. They've been through so much. There's a situation, everything from south of Punta Gorda all the way down to the middle of the Alligator Alley. Most of it's destroyed, totally destroyed. And it's a shame. We as a company and we as a family have sent a check to the American Red Cross to get pittance to what it's going to cost to rebuild. On the other side, is the thing that's got me the most upset about it. Last week, a good friend was working the detail out on 275, and she when a road worker ran a pitchfork through him, not just a regular pitchfork, but one that was attached to a tractor. And Mike Hargrave lost his life that night. And we buried him on Monday. Yesterday morning at 2:30, a young man, Blaine Lane, was assisting on a warrant arrest when shots were fired from inside a trailer. He had already taken a position to defend himself, but one of the shots came through the trailer, struck Deputy Lane. They thought at first it was just his shoulder, but it went through to the chest cavity, and he expired on the way to Lakeland Hospital. So tonight's program is dedicated to those two men who gave their lives so that others can live a good, free life. Both these men were very hard workers. Mike had just 6 months left to go before he retired. He's a 19-year veteran of Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. Blaine is a brand new eight and a half months on the job deputy in Polk County. According to Grady Judd, he was an excellent deputy, a good standing with the department, good standing in this community, a good person. And so to their families, we send out our deepest sympathies, and we hope that this tragedy doesn't strike Florida deputies again for a long time. It's kind of tough. So tonight's program is dedicated to all three of these, the people from Southwest Florida who have lost everything, the people from Mike Hargrave's family, both Sean and Bo, and Lane's parents, mom and dad, his girlfriend, his fiance, I should say. Our deepest sympathies are with you. If there's anything we as a company or we as individuals can do, please, Don.
All right, we'll kick it off. We certainly hope all the very positive reaction today within the state, certainly down at Fort Myers and that area where the storm really hit. The president in town today, President Biden, and of course with DeSantis, the governor of the state of Florida, working together. Hopefully they're saying you're going to work very, very positively together to do everything you can possibly do for the state of Florida. And let's just hope that that follows through. Let's bring Roy Cummings in, as we always do, to begin the show. Roy's up in Tampa, Florida. And do we have Roy with us?
Hello.
Okay. Roy, welcome. Welcome. We obviously missed last week with the hurricane and everything, but we're going to jump right back in. We'll start off with football because you got a lot of news up there with what's happening with the Bucs. They had a tough weekend Sunday night game that everybody had a chance to see. Their quarterback had a tough night and also is having a tough night off the field simultaneously. So a lot of bad things happening at Tampa right now, whether they can correct it or not. What do you think?
Don, our eminent sportscaster, the guy who is an Oscar in everybody's mind in the Southwest Florida area, is about to speak to us with his melodic tones. Mr. Cummings.
Who is this?
Oh. Mr. Cummings. Who is this?
Don't tell him. Go tell him, Roy. I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, as always, he clearly overstates my position. But, hey, I just want to – I hope everybody is well. Don, I hope you made it through the storm okay. I know I've got family in Sarasota, so I know it was pretty rough there for a while. Hearts and, you know, thoughts and prayers out to everybody in South Florida here, guys, as we continue to try to get through this this difficult time. So a lot of people struggling, obviously, south of where I am. And I was fortunate. I was very fortunate to have come out of this unscathed. So just praying for all the people who did not.
Absolutely, no question about it. My daughter flew in. She was headed down to Naples this morning. They opened up at Fort Myers, and they had a full daylight landing and taking off. The airport was open today, so that's a very, very good sign. But you're exactly right, Roy. From Venice down to below Fort Myers, why they really got hit hard. And Sanibel got crushed.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, I just saw on the news where one couple finally got back to their home in Sanibel, and lo and behold, they were just shocked that it was everything was fine. It was as if it was untouched, but it was crazy. Every other house on their block, every other house was destroyed, and every other house was not. It was just it's amazing how these storms work. It's really incredible, guys. And boy, oh boy, it's just a you know, sometimes I think we take it for granted. You know, it's like, oh, it's a rainstorm. It's not. It's a lot more than that. And when they tell you to evacuate, you got to evacuate because, you know, you can rebuild a home. You can, you know, somehow get back a lot of the stuff you lose, but you can't get back your life if you try to take chances. So,
no
anyway,
question. We were just so lucky here in Sarasota. We still haven't gotten computers back up and so forth. But I mean, other than losing power. We lost basically nothing. One palm tree. That was about it.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Very happy to hear it. My in-laws live in Siesta Key, and they were without power for a few days, and still boiling water. Tomorrow, I think they're going to get the okay finally to start running water again. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But always a tough time. Always something you got to pay attention to.
No question. Now let's see if we can jump back into the world of sports. And I just wanted to start with last Sunday night's game because it was really one of the feature games of the 22 season. And a lot of things happening both on the field for Tampa Bay and also off the field. So a lot of news in your area, Roy.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it was a great matchup, obviously, of a rematch of the Super Bowl from a couple of years ago. And you know, it didn't surprise me that the Chiefs won that game, and it really didn't surprise me all that much that they outplayed the Bucs to the level that they did. I was a little surprised that the defense didn't show up a little bit more. Thought that the defense had really figured some things out, obviously. I mean, but, you know, look, I still think the Chiefs, even without Tyreek Hill, as difficult a team as you're going to face in terms of offensive capability, they can do anything. Patrick Mahomes, when he's on, is extremely strong. The running game is good. They've got some players, Pacheco, who can just, boy, oh boy, does he put his head down and just drive through you. So it's a really good team, and the Bucs just aren't there yet. I mean, it's very similar, it seems to me, right now. I know we don't know how it's going to finish up, but you know, this is kind of how it was the first year with Tom Brady here. It was a little bit, you know, they look good, and, you know, at times things didn't look good, and you were a little bit concerned, you know, through the first half of the season, and then they poured it on late. I think the same thing could happen here as long as they can stay healthy. But the key, I think, for the Bucs is they've got to get some receivers healthy and beyond Mike Evans. They've got to get Julio Jones or Chris Godwin. At least one of those guys has got to be a big part of this because they're trying to, and now, you know, with the possible loss of Cameron Brady tight end, they could be in some trouble because again, you know how much Tom Brady likes to play, likes to work his tight ends. And he was doing that obviously with Cameron Brady in that game until he got hurt. And now they, you know, Cole Beasley retires. So now they got to go out and find another body. They're facing some challenges here. The good news for the Bucs is that obviously, you know, they've got a very strong defense. Didn't look like it the other night, but the good news is they've got Tom Brady and they've got time, and they're in a division that is pretty forgiving. So I think they're in pretty good shape, and boy, oh boy, you could still talk about Durley, only a quarter of the season through, but you could actually talk about a Tampa Bay Eagles NFC Championship matchup.
Roger?
Well, only time will tell, Roy. It's early in the season, but there's a lot of 2-2 teams in the NFL, I'll tell you that. And I'll tell you what surprises me is that it just goes to show you sometimes one player does not make the difference, even though that's a quarterback. And I think it's a perfect example is the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, I don't think anyone would have thought with Dak being out, that they would be playing as well as they are. And I'm very impressed. The Giants at 3-1. And, what's your assessment of some of the other teams in the league?
Yeah, look, I think what the Cowboys are proving is that if you're a good team and you lose your quarterback, you just need a quarterback to go in there and not mess it up. Cooper Rush is just playing good, solid football. It's not exceptional. It's not, it's not outstanding. It's not highlight reel football. But, he's making the plays that are there. He's not trying to force the ball. And if you've got a quarterback, young or old, doesn't matter, who's willing to just be, in essence, a game manager. I know they hate that phrase, but just go out there and just do your job and don't try to take too many chances. You can win football games, and you're right. We're seeing a lot of teams do that. I don't think the Falcons are a team that is out of the out of the race here. I don't think Carolina's out of the race. We'll see how it goes. I think the Giants are playing a little bit over their heads, but if you get some confidence, suddenly you start to play a little bit better naturally. So, let's see how it goes. I'm anxious to see them against some better teams and see how they fare. So the NFC is turning out to be quite very tight, because right now, who do you look at in the NFC and say, outside of Philadelphia maybe, and say, okay, well, there's the cream of the crop, because you said a lot of 2-2 teams right now.
And Philadelphia did everything wrong in the first half of the game on Sunday, Roger. Fumbles, interceptions, everything. And then they put it all together and won the game. But they didn't play very well the first half.
No, they didn't. And we'll talk to Bill about that. But I don't know whether you saw Hurts on the Manning cast on Monday Night Football. But, he's a special guy. And his father was a high school coach. And they showed this one scissor play, and he said, I haven't thrown or involved in that play since I was in Little League football. And, I just thought that he's a quiet guy, but he really leads the team. And, boy, he can take some hits, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're finding out that, yes, he can take some hits. He can't take too many.
No,
he's got to do a
right.
better job of protecting him. But back to what Don said, to me, it's a great sign of a good football team when you can play as poorly as the Eagles did in the first half and still win the game. I don't care who the opponent is. That says something about your team overall. It's a 60-minute game, and a lot of times, if you can go out there and somehow win the second half, you can win the game, and it's big. So. Really like what the Eagles are doing. They're gonna continue to face some challenges, no doubt about it. But they have done a good job of building around Jalen Hurts. They really have, and it's looking like the right call to have gotten rid of Carson Wentz when they did and made this move. And really, it's a matter now of just again, filling in the pieces here and there. And it looks as though they've done that.
Going back to your point, Roger, and, the Dallas Cowboys are going to be without their frontline quarterback for at least one more week, and I wouldn't even be surprised the way the writings are coming down to this point midway through this week that it may be longer than this weekend because they're saying he's having a very, very difficult time gripping the football. So that may be a story that's going to be ongoing for another week or at least maybe even two.
What's the rush, guys? Pardon the pun, guys, but what's the rush? When you got a guy playing as well as Cooper Rush is, and he's playing exceptionally well, why rush the other guy back? I understand he's your best quarterback, and you want to have your best players out there. But if he's compromised in any way, 10%, let the kid go because he's doing an exceptional job. Sorry to interrupt you there, Roger, but I just wanted to, make that point.
No, you're right, Roy, absolutely. My point was about the Sunday's Eagles-Jaguars game was that Trevor Lawrence fumbled a number of times, I think five. And a lot of that they feel is predicated on how bad the weather conditions were and the wet field and everything. And I've heard a number of quote-unquote experts say that even when you're preparing for weather like that, there are coaches that will just take you inside the dome practice facility, the enclosed practice facility, and where others like Belichick will take you out in the rain, the snow during the week to make sure that you can grip the ball. But I think that a lot of that, the Eagles look great, don't get me wrong, but I also think that Trevor Lawrence fumbling a number of times also had a big effect on that game.
It did, and you're right. There are different philosophies when it comes. If you know you're going to be playing in wet weather, usually the coaches will give you at least one practice day, and maybe not a whole day, because you still have work that you want to get done. But if you know for a fact that you're going to be facing some tough weather or some wet weather, you'll run some wet ball drills. You'll do that. That's a big part of it. And you're right. Some coaches don't do it, but it makes some sense to go out there and run a red zone series or run a couple of 11-on-11 series with the wet ball and the wet conditions, because granted, you don't want to test fate and get anybody hurt in practice. But at the end of the day, you've got to kind of get used to that. And if you've got a bunch of kids who aren't used to it, players that aren't used to it, if you're a dome team, you're going on the road and you're outside, sometimes you got to do it.
Yeah.
Roy, going back to your initial point about the Bucs game, and that was it, obviously you can't foresee there's going to be a fumble on the opening kickoff, put yourself in a position to give Kansas City the ball twice in the 20-yard line in the first quarter before you even get a chance to get the game underway. But some of the things that surprised me beyond the fact that the fumble were the fact that the Bucs were starting to make a comeback. What did they do? They kicked the ball out of bounds and give it to them on the 40-yard line. Something as stupid as that. Two punts during the course of the game. One of them wasn't more than 25 yards. I mean, you can't make those kinds of dumb plays not challenged. I mean, you're not being challenged on these plays. All you're doing is kicking the ball off, and you kick it out of bounds at the 5-yard line when you're coming back and you got it down to 7 points. Doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. But it's just further proof that sometimes football is often won by the team that makes the least mistake. And certainly that was the case in this situation. Again, it wasn't like the Bucs were really in the game. They kept themselves out of it. If you're a Bucs fan, you look at it and you say, okay, they had a couple of series where the offense really got going and it looked like they were able to kind of just dictate what they wanted to do. That's a good sign going forward. You have to worry a little bit about the defense. They haven't, outside of the Packers, they really haven't faced anybody. And granted it was the Cowboys, but I'm not so sure that they faced really exceptional teams. Not saying that they don't deserve to be the number one defense in the league. I'm not saying that they didn't earn the fact that they gave up very few points, very few yards through the first quarter of the season. I'm not taking that away from them, but this was a sign that there might be some holes in that defense that have to be shored up.
Roger?
Here's what we might have lost.
I'm here. Sorry, I'm here. Sorry about that. That my question is, do you think that Todd Bowles needs to get away from a bit, calling the defensive plays and more managing the whole team? I would like your opinion about that. I have mine, and I think he should.
Well, I don't know. I don't think so, and I'll want to hear your reason behind your thought on that, because I think this defense has been exceptional for the last since Todd Bowles came in. And it wasn't exceptional on Sunday, but that's the first time it hasn't been exceptional. You don't break what's not broken. That's one of the strengths of this team. In fact, that's what carried the Buccaneers through the first portion of the season is their defense. I wouldn't be messing with that at all. I don't think that Todd Bowles is having any issues whatsoever in terms of running the game and everything else that's happening around him because he's calling defensive plays. When you've got a guy like Tom Brady a quarterback, and they really believe in Byron Leftwich, and well they should. It's not like you have to spend a lot of time worrying about the offense. That's going to take care of itself. Again, injuries I think are really hurting them there. But at the end of the day, I think Todd Bowles is doing an exceptional job calling the defense, building the defense, and I wouldn't change anything there. So, Roger, I'm anxious to hear why you think it should be the other way around.
Well,
I'm going to have to hold it. We'll have to hold that till next week, Roger. We got Billy on the line. And, Roy, thank you so very, very much. As always, we'll come in with the first question next Wednesday night, and we'll have another game under our belt. We'll see what Todd Bowles of the defense do there. But thank you very much. Have a great week. And certainly we wish everybody in the state of Florida nothing but the best, Roy.
Same to you guys. Have a great week. We'll talk next
you
week.
You too, Rick. All right. Have a great week.
Thanks, Roy.
Be safe. Take care.
Billy Werndahl with us right now from Philadelphia. And Billy, something that I don't normally do because we go right to you. Got so many things to talk about with you and what's happening in the world of sports. But first of all, let me just say Billy's one of the outstanding sportscasters in Philadelphia. He's been there for such a long period of time. And one thing I'd like you to do at the top of the show, Billy, open your segment here the way you do at home, because the way you do on your radio show, because people all across the country will be able to listen to it. So open this one, this segment up the way you would do it if you were on your radio station in Philadelphia.
Well, thank you, Don. You're listening to WCHE 1520, 95.3 on the FM dial, WCHE1520.com, Facebook as well, and you always can follow me on Twitter, the Werndahl, W-E-R-N-D-L.
There we go. I love that.
Absolutely right. I want Billy to get that in so the people admit we'll repeat it again right at the end, because most people don't have pencils and papers and things in front of them when they're listening to the show. But I want Billy to have an opportunity to give you the opportunity to hear him anywhere in the country that you may be listening to radio. Billy, we've got to jump off the football for a minute. The playoffs are going to start on Friday. Let me get your opinion. I'm not going to give any opinion. I'll let you and Roger give your opinions first. What do you think the Phillies are going in against the Cardinals?
Well, look, the Cardinals have always been the traditionally good playoff team. But I look at the Phillies' starting rotation with Wheeler, Nola, and Suarez. I mean, he had a blip the other night against Houston. He didn't have his good stuff. But I think their starting pitching is a lot stronger than St. Louis. But the key will be, can the Phillies play defense? Can they play small ball in the postseason? And how will their bullpen hold up when Wheeler or Nola turn the ball, or Suarez turn the ball over to the bullpen? They're the three components that I'm looking at. But I think they could match up with the Cardinals in this first round of the playoffs.
Roger?
Well, they were 4-3 with the Cardinals during the year, Bill. And what do you think about talking about the bullpen? I totally agree with you on that. And the question is, what do you think about Eflin in the bullpen? I think he's done a really good job.
Well, I think Eflin's one of the parts of the puzzle in the bullpen. Alvarado, Eflin, and Robertson. I'm not going to count on Sir Anthony Dominguez. I'm just a little nervous about him.
I don't think
he's completely healthy. So I think in a closing situation, I like, if you're going to use Alvarado, have Alvarado face the 3-4-5 hitters in the lineup. You know, I throw the closer out the window. I want my best relief pitcher to face the meat of their order, and that's what you have to do.
I agree.
Billy, I think, let me just throw in a couple of points. One, I think the starting pitchers are going to have to throw at least 90 pitches. They're going to have to be able to stay in there and pitch, you know, six-plus innings, maybe even seven. I think the starting pitcher for the Phillies, to be honest with you, is better than the St. Louis Cardinals. The problem they have is winning at Busch Memorial Stadium. The Cardinals are, for the season, 12 games over 500 at home. They're a very, very solid home team. They've got an excellent lineup. They're good defensively. And the Phillies are going to have to play not baseball like they played last night. You know, they got 15 base hits and 10 runs and had a no-hitter thrown at them for eight innings. I mean, they can't play like that and win anything.
Lost 3-2
today. You're right, Don. Ron, Don, you're absolutely right. And they can't solely depend on the home run.
No.
Because the playoffs are a different animal. You've got to create opportunities on the bases. You got to play a little small ball. You have to bunt in situations. Because, look, everybody is loaded up in the bullpen. One sign of trouble, they are going to the bullpen. So the Phillies have got to manufacture runs in the postseason. And if they get by the Cardinals, then they have a daunting task in front of them.
Roger?
Well, you've probably heard it many times, Bill, in Philadelphia about paybacks. This is like a payback from 2011 when the Cardinals were the wild card. And they came in, and the Phillies had the best record, I believe, 102 wins in baseball that
yep.
year.
Mm-hmm.
And they
yep.
were picked to win the World Series, go all the way. And I'll never forget that 1-0 game, okay, Carpenter versus Holiday. I mean, you'll remember it. All of us remember it, 1-0. And it was that one run in the first inning, as I recall. So yeah, anything can happen because the Cardinals did it in 11. Who's to say that now the Phillies? I doubt it, but that's what people are saying,
Don't
you know.
Don't be a doubting Thomas, Roger. Don't be a doubting Thomas. I don't like guys who are doubting Thomases, all right? Think positively. You know, it's ironic. October 7th, 2011, is that game you're talking about, Roger, when Carpenter shut out the Phillies 1-0. They opened the series. Of course, that was played at Citizens Bank Park. They opened the season series in St. Louis October 7th, 2022. Is that a little magic or what?
Isn't that amazing? Amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Deja vu, Don. Deja vu.
Well, as I say, I think the Phillies have a couple of things I want to ask you about, too, Billy. I mean, the Phillies have highs and they have lows. They play well two or three games, four games. They've got to play at least two real good ones in this series or they're going to be home. So two You're things.
Right.
One, do you think they can play a consistent two games to get out of St. Louis with a win since you're only going to play in St. Louis. You're not coming back to Citizens Bank Park. And number two, how does this affect Robbie Thompson?
Well, I certainly think he's secured the job for next year, all right?
You
Let's
do.
Put that to bed. I really believe that. I really believe Robbie Thompson is the manager next year, unless something unforeseen happens. Because he did a heck of a job. He's in the in the running for manager of the year. But now the one other thing we didn't touch on, they've got to get production out of Bryce Harper. He's
yep,
struggled the
right.
last 15, 17 games. He has yep. got to step up big, big time in the series. If you're being paid all that money, you got to put the team on your shoulder. You got to be the big-time factor in this series or a deciding factor.
Roger, I know you were tough on Realmuto all year, but I talked to Billy. I did Billy's show with him early this week. I think he's the most valuable player on the team this year, and I think he's got to have a half-decent world or playoff series as well. I think he's a big key.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I agree with that, but I agree with Bill about Harper, and the only thing is that he's only going to be able to DH, as we know, because of that problem with his arm. And
right.
he's probably just having surgery after the season. But he has got to produce, and he has not been producing since basically he came back off the injury list. I think, two home runs, I think. Right, Bill?
That's correct. And you mentioned JT Realmuto. He's got to be in the conversation for the MVP. I don't think he'll win it. But he put this team on his back when Harper went down. He was a key. And I'm going to say one thing, and I don't think I'll get an argument from you guys. JT Realmuto is the best all-around catcher in Major League Baseball. Show me another catcher better than Realmuto, and I'll eat crow right now on this show.
Well, two things. He does everything they want. He throws the ball well, holds runners so that they can't just run up and down and steal bases on him. And number two, he plays every game. I mean, look at the number of games that he's played in his performance. I mean, he had a shaky beginning. But you can look at it from the All-Star break in, and I don't have the paper in front of me to tell you. I was hitting 272 or 273 when I saw him, not today's game, yesterday. So he's something in that range. I mean, what catcher in the National League is hitting 273 and hitting the home runs he's hitting and playing the defense he's playing and playing every game?
Don, he caught more innings than any catcher in baseball by 200 or 300 innings. That is unbelievable. And these idiots were trying to run him out of town and trying to say the Phillies got hoodwinked by signing the $119 million deal. This now looks like a bargain because this guy wants to play. And that's the key. If a guy wants to play, some of these guys are always looking to opt out. Oh, I don't feel good today. My toe hurts, the whole deal. I mean, this guy is a gamer. And anybody that denigrates JT Realmuto, they are way off base.
The guy that hoodwinked him, Bill, was Castellanos. I'll tell you what.
Well,
you talk about a dumb move. That's a dumb move.
I did not let – first of all, if you sign Schwarber, that's one of your big bats. You have Realmuto, Schwarber, and Harper in the middle, and Hoskins. Why did you have to bring in another guy who's a defensive liability? And Don alluded to this at the top of the show. You have to play good defense. Schwarber is an average left fielder, and when Castellanos has got to play right field, you hold your breath because he plays right field like he's on roller skates.
And
not
even
have
center,
a good
Billy, even center's not a lockdown job.
Well, they really like Marsh a lot. They think going forward, Marsh could hit 260, 270, hit about 17 home runs a year. He's a very good defensive center fielder, and that's what they need. Herrera was so inconsistent. The other guys, Vierling, people like that, they're good fourth and fifth outfielders.
Well, that's good. And, you know, about Marsh, I will say, Bill, that I agree with you that, you know, they're very high on him. And he's a young guy. And that they have control of him. That's the key, too.
Mm-hmm. You're right about that, Roger.
All right, let's go back to your small ball, Billy. How many guys on this team can bunt? How many guys can hit and run? How many guys can steal bases? Where's the versatility coming to play small ball with the 2022 Phillies?
Well, you know, Don, they're going to have to do it. I mean, you're going to have to manufacture run because every game is going to be relatively close. I mean, you're going to have to sacrifice. You know, the one problem playing small ball is so many guys do not have a good two-strike approach. Everybody's swinging from their heels. And they really don't understand the strike zone. I mean, this analytics stuff, I mean, to a certain extent, it's good to have all this information. I think they overload the players with information. You know, I look in the dugout, and they got their computers out, and they're looking at the computers. Give me a break. Come on. Does the great players of yesteryear have to rely on computers? No. I just think that, you know, that's so ridiculous. I think
Willie Mays had the greatest line ever, Billy. See the ball, hit the ball. That's what it's all about.
No question about it. And, I mean, look at Yogi Berra was one of the worst two-strike hitters, the bad ball hitters, I should say, in baseball.
Right,
and again, and look, you look at Yogi Berra's stats. I think his entire career struck out less than 700 times in his career. How about Joe DiMaggio? All these great players, they weren't striking out at a record pace. How do you strike out 200 times in a season? That means 200 times the ball is not in play.
Joe DiMaggio struck out 13 times, Billy, in 1941. 13 times.
Absolutely.
13, wow.
13
That's
times.
Amazing.
And he was a power hitter. All right? And how about this stat, Don? Look at this. Of the great players, Henry Aaron. How many times do you think Henry Aaron struck out 100 times in a season?
Well, without the book, I'd say very few, if ever.
Zero.
Well,
How many times did Willie Mays strike out 100 times in a year?
Zero.
One time. And when he played for the Mets.
But Billy, the Phillies can do that in one game. I mean, they can strike out 12, 13, 14, 15 times in a game. You only have 27 outs. It's a very simple game. Take 15 from 27. How much chance do you have to score?
You're right about that, John. They're so right about that. You're taking, you know, the bat basically out of the guy's hands when he strikes out. Goes back to the dugout. Did he move the runner?
And he can't help the team at all. He can't do what he can't do.
Nope.
One thing positive. What is that bad?
Nope. You got to put the ball in play.
You're exactly. Both of you are 100%. And I'll tell you, getting back to the bullpen. That statistic about the number of innings that the starting pitchers have pitched, and the number of innings that the relief corps has pitched, but the far excessive number of walks, as we all know, of the relievers over the starting pitchers is mind-boggling. I knew it was bad, but it's bad.
Well, look, if you put the leadoff runner on base, especially with a walk, start to deflate your team a little bit. Because normally, if a guy gets on base with a walk to lead off an inning, he normally scores.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I get back to these people that are running baseball today, these analytics people, that they spend millions and millions of dollars every team, and we have an inferior product out there.
Well, you're right. Say that again.
Absolutely, yeah.
Billy, let me ask you this, Billy. You and Roger both. Give me your 1, 2, 3. Let's say that our starting pitchers for the Phillies go 6 2/3, 6 1/3 innings. 1, 2, 3 out of the bullpen for Thompson.
1, 2, 3, the three guys you think coming out.
I
think first it'll be depending on the situation. I think you'd probably see Eflin, then you would see Robertson, and then you'd see Alvarado, depending on the situation, Don.
I'll tell you, I was a very strong advocate of Robertson coming to the Phillies. I thought they made a steal when they got him at the trading deadline, you know, at the free agent deadline. It hasn't worked out quite as well as I thought it would, but I still think he's a quality player.
Well, he's been down the road with a lot of clubs. He knows what playoff pressure is about. And the one guy who has taken this team by the seat of its pants is Kyle Schwarber. He's the leader on this team. It's not Harper.
Yeah.
It is Kyle Schwarber because he's had postseason experience and he has a World Series ring.
Roger, that's very – you know, you're right. And I don't think that people realize that. And, you know, he's been the leadoff hitter for so long now. And, wound up with, 46 home runs, I think. Right, Bill?
Absolutely. Very, very solid year.
He had a character as a leadoff hitter, Billy, but he certainly made the most of it.
Right. And the one negative is the 200 strikeouts.
That's right. Yeah. And the batting average at, 216? 213,
214.
Right.
Yeah.
He's got to be the middle of the order guy. They've got to find a legitimate leadoff hitter.
Well, I'm surprised your second baseman is their leadoff hitter, to be honest with you. I don't quite understand why he's been moved around so much. I mean, he's very consistent. He's going to hit 295 to 305. But I would have thought he would have been your leadoff hitter, but it didn't turn out that way.
Well, he was hurt for a while, too.
You know why, Don? Everything is being dictated, and Roger, by the analytics department.
Yeah. Upstairs.
Yep.
But,
you know
what
I would do with that analytics
department? I'm with you. Throw them out. Throw the thumbs out.
I will say this. The Phillies will advance to the next round of the playoffs.
Oh,
there you go.
Listen, there you go. Phillies stayed
there
for 222.
Well, I came close to my prediction, Bill, of 90 wins for the Phillies. I came three shy, and if they had done something against the Cubs, I would have hit that number.
Well, I just think they're gonna march into St. Louis and win two games in there.
Billy, before we lose your intelligence in the National Football League, how about those Birds? We talked about them a couple of times earlier this year when you were on with us. They've gotten off to that 4-0 start that a lot of people thought they would. They thought Minnesota would be the only tough game, and Minnesota's played well in games that they didn't play with the Eagles, but against the Eagles, they did not play very well, and the Eagles have jumped right out.
Well, the only concern I have, Don, is the injuries. They were beset with injuries. Jordan Mailata goes down. We don't know. The Eagles don't know if he's going to play on Sunday. Isaac Seumalo went down, the right guard. They don't know if he's going to play on Sunday. Jake Elliott, their outstanding place kicker, is questionable, and as is Darius Slay. So injuries could be a real factor, and that's what cause for concern. I mean, everybody has their Super Bowl hats and banners and all that stuff. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves with all that. I mean, they played very, very good football in the first 4 weeks of the season, with the exception, I'm going to say the Detroit game was not a real good game. The last 3 weeks they've been playing very, very solid football. But
especially
again,
after the first half, all the fumbles and stuff in the first half, they played very well after that.
Well, but the thing is, I just think that this will be a tough game in the desert. It's going to be a tough game in the desert because this team, you don't know about this Arizona Cardinals team. They've got the young kid, Kyler Murray. They've got a tough running back. They've got some very good, solid receivers, and their defense is not. So the Eagles have got to take care of business and take care of business very quickly.
Roger?
You know, talking about Murray, I know in his contract initially, he had to spend, 4.5 hours or something like that daily studying the playbook and everything. And they took that out of the contract. I guess there was some protest about it and everything. But it just reminded me of AI. It's practice. It's only practice. You know,
Roger, here's what I'll interject on that. If you have to tell a player that you have to spend X amount of hours in the tape room or in the batting cage or working at your trade, isn't that an indictment of the young man that he's not taking his job seriously? He's just taking a big paycheck. You have to want to be there. Peyton Manning was there at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, his day off. It would not leave that facility until 10 o'clock at night. They actually had to chase him out of the facility in Indianapolis. They said, Peyton, that's enough. But a guy has to be told, come on, he's not being paid $11.14 an hour. He's being paid a lot of money. And his responsibility is to his teammates and the people that pay the freight.
Well,
the Dallas Cowboys have made a nice recovery. Their Dirk went down. Are they as good as they have appeared to be the last 3 weeks? Are they right there with the Eagles? Is it going to be a two-team race to the wire?
Well, I think the Cowboys are a good team, but I think the Eagles are a better team when they're healthy. That is the key, when they are healthy. Now, that's the big factor. Of course, you mentioned the Cowboys lost Dak Prescott with that broken finger. But I think the Eagles are a better team personnel-wise. Not by a lot, but I think they're a better team. I think the Cowboys will make some noise, but I think the Eagles can take care of it. I think the Eagles are one of the top three teams in the NFC right now.
Anybody surprise you so far?
Not really, Don. I mean, right now you're trying to get a handle on who's going to be where and who's going to make the first step forward. The one surprise is the Rams. They really struggled out of the gate. But again, remember when Tampa Bay won that Super Bowl a few years ago, after 12 games, they were only 7-5, and then they went on that roll and went into the Super Bowl and beat Kansas City.
Right.
Hey, Bill, getting back to that game on Sunday, but on the Jaguars, of course, a lot of us are Doug Peterson fan, and, you know, it was sad that the way he was let go. But He really, I think, has improved Trevor Lawrence, even though he had all those fumbles with the wet ball and everything. But it had to be great to see the way Doug was received by the fandom.
Absolutely.
And what did you think? I think the Jaguars, they're young, and they're a team that I think will just continue to get better. What do you think?
Absolutely. And you look what they did in the draft. They have Josh Allen, one linebacker, number 41. Devin Lloyd out of Utah was a legitimate first rounder. They got him late in the first round. And their number one overall pick, Trayvon Walker out of Georgia. They mm-hmm. have three outstanding young linebackers. And Olakon, the kid from Yale, five-year veteran, stabilizes that whole defense. I think this team is one to be reckoned with. Maybe not this year. I think they could win their division because their division's mm-hmm. wide open. But I really believe Doug Peterson will get this team playing at a very high level.
I think even with all the controversy and the coach getting fired and everything else, I think from a drafting standpoint, Billy, Jacksonville really did a pretty good job. I mean, a lot of very unfortunate things happened last year, midway through the season at the end. But it seems like they do have a basis to work with.
They do. They have a good foundation, Don. And I'll tell you one thing. Urban Meyer should not be on television. This guy is a complete farce. This guy tried to ruin a franchise. I mean, this guy is the most overrated guy in football today. Urban Meyer. Oh, he's a genius. Yeah, really? Ohio State, I could get a lady off the street to coach the team because they have so much talent. All right? But, you know, when he had to really coach, he showed he couldn't coach. So I hope Fox, to give him that job again, that was despicable, in my opinion.
Couldn't agree with you more, Bill. Absolutely. Go ahead, Don.
No, I was just going to say, every place that he's gone from his first coaching assignment, he's been criticized for exactly the same things. He keeps winning until he got to Jacksonville. He didn't win this time. But, I mean, he did everything in the world wrong, and yet he came out smelling like a rose.
He did. And the one thing, he's always looking for his next opportunity.
Absolutely.
Right? And that's one thing.
And even TV, Billy, they keep bringing it back. Why would you bring him back to be on TV?
I don't know. What does he bring to the table? He's about as exciting as watching you put your shoes on, Don.
Go ahead, Roger. Mike Schulte's going to be a little late, so. I'm going to ask Billy to hold on with us for another 4 or 5 minutes. But go ahead, Roger.
No, I agree. I don't get it with a lot of these people that they have put back on TV. I mean, you wonder what the heck is going on. Who is making these selections? I mean, I'm not a big fan of Chris Collinsworth's son. Okay, but he's the son of Chris Collinsworth, so he's going to get a great job on the pregame show. I mean, and I'm not just singling him out. It's just what you guys were saying about, and but the thing that with Urban Meyer that amazed me.
Roger, well, just to interrupt you. Sims has the same situation with his dad, so that's part of the business now.
Well, yeah, you're right. It is. It's nepotism to the nth degree. But the thing that got me about Meyer, I couldn't believe that he ever did it when he stayed in when they were playing out in Ohio last year. The Bengals, yeah, Cincinnati, and he stayed because he went to a steakhouse in Columbus, right?
And plus, he went to a strip club afterwards, I believe.
Yeah, right.
Well, maybe the steaks weren't cooked too well.
There's a line there, Don. I'm going to stay away from it.
Yeah.
Billy, let me throw one last question at you, Billy. How would you like to be part of the Nebraska organization with their head coach, with their offensive and defensive coordinators, and they're in the Big Ten? How would you like to be a part of that school?
Well, Don, I'm going to tell you something right now. Nebraska, I did games in Nebraska back in the day when it was Nebraska football, big-time football. You look at Nebraska, and you look at these other schools. Do you know how much money they paid in buyouts? There's been five major college coaches fired. You know how much money they paid in buyouts? $65 million.
Right.
Where are they getting this money from? Television. When is television going to wise up and say, hey, you know, we cannot continue to pay these white people? Because, you know, it's just getting totally out of control.
Well, it is getting out of control. And you just go up to Rutgers and look at the money that they've spent. You know, first of all, getting into the Big Ten is, you know, just way, way, way over their heads. And you know, he was a good coach the first time he came to Rutgers, and he's probably still a pretty good coach. But can you recruit well enough at Rutgers with the academic requirements there to compete with Ohio State, with Michigan, and some of these other schools? You can't do it.
Don, you have to lighten your restrictions up if you're going to compete with the big boys. And, of course,
right.
They're going to sell if they're going to sell Rutgers as the New York market, which it is. And they're going to, with this NIL, they'll be able to get some players that normally they wouldn't have gotten. So it's going to be interesting to see what Rutgers does in the next 3 years with the NIL name, image, and likeness. I think that, you know, again, they'll play the New York market, and that'll be the key.
Well, let's wind this up, and you guys pick. Billy has already picked the Phillies to win out there in St. Louis. Any of the other teams you think there may be an upset that you'd like to touch on before we let Billy go?
You know, one team I'm interested to watch, the Cleveland Guardians. They are a good young baseball team. They're
and
under
well
the radar.
Managed. Well managed,
well managed,
my boy.
Well managed by Francona. And they may be a team that's going to be a factor in October.
I agree with
that's
you. I think they are.
Yeah, I think Francona is a tremendous manager. Absolutely.
Well, he's proven it now with a bunch of it. Billy, thank you so very, very much. I really appreciate you spending
any
extra
time for you and Roger. Roger the Dodger.
Thanks, Bill. You're the best.
Right. Bye-bye.
Take care, partner. Say hello to everybody for us. Take care. Bye.
Thanks, Donald. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Stay safe.
Thanks, Billy.
You too.
All right, Roger.
Okay.
We'll hold it here for a little bit. Frank tells me Mike is having some trouble with us tonight, so
Well, we've got Dane Hendler with us, Don.
That's what I'm going to say. We want you to introduce us. Go do it.
Okay. Well, listen, Zane, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Okay, great. Well, tell us, you know, you're doing a radio show on the student station at Ridley Township High School in suburban Philadelphia. And tell everybody exactly how this started your career in broadcasting, and you're enjoying it, and you're looking to expand it. I think it's a great story. Go ahead, tell everybody how it started.
Okay. So my friend joined this radio club because my school has like a bunch of radio clubs. So. And then I thought that it would be interesting to just join. Then I found out, like, it was, like, this process and stuff, and I got my first show, and I just loved it. It was great. I had so much fun.
Good. And tell us about the show. You played music, and exactly how does that work?
I connect my computer to this, like, they have a whole elaborate studio, and I put Spotify on there and just, they make me have a playlist that I have to create and stuff.
Well, you told me about playing the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah, I played the, I have some themes. I played the Beach Boys, 1 week, and then I had a playlist for the Beatles this week.
Hey,
one
guys,
thing Roger hasn't told us yet, how old are you?
I'm 14 years old.
14. Okay, Roger.
Yeah, he's a freshman at Bib Ridley. You're 15 in November, right?
No, I am 15 in June.
Oh, you are? Okay. I was thinking, is Reese
That's
in November?
Brother. My brother's birthday is
That's
November.
That's it. Yeah, Reese is in, okay. So you'll be 15, and then, so basically, in about a year and 9 months, you're going to have a license, which will really be great for you, maybe not great for your mom and dad at times, but that's great. But so this is your freshman year, and does the station broadcast a lot of hours, Zane, or is it limited?
They have days where the students, like, play music, but then when they're not there, they put it on automation.
Oh, okay. And what's the frequency? 94.5, I think?
Oh, 94.9 FM. 94.9
FM. 94.9
FM.
And, you know, we all know the Philadelphia area, and my high school has the oldest student radio station in the country, WHHS. And I know you made it, and I didn't, because I auditioned to do our high school basketball games, and a guy that I wasn't the best friends with got it. So, congratulations! What are some of I know you were also telling me about you like physical science in school, right?
Yeah, that's because my teacher's like very nice. She's understanding and she's.
Well, I'll tell you what, that always helps. And I had middle school today with 6 band classes, and I got to tell you, when I left, I was drained. But you know, you're talking here to Frank Carroll, who's our executive producer, and also Don Henderson, who is a Hall of Fame broadcaster, sportscaster. Your dad knows all about him. So go ahead, Don. You take it over or ask Zane whatever you want.
Well, I'm just glad to see you got yourself, you got your foot in the door and you're really enjoying it. That's the biggest thing. If you can continue to do the things that you like to do, it's not work. It's all pleasure. So just continue to do what you're doing. Enjoy it. Have a lot of fun. And have fun with the people that work with you.
Thank you very much.
Zane, let me ask you this. Does the station do any of your football games or maybe basketball games when you get into the that season?
I mean, they do. They make us like do funding announcements. And I guess they like also make us like. I guess we would announce like an upcoming game or something. I'm pretty sure. I'm not fully sure. Like we would announce. I don't think I would be like announcing for the game, but I think we were announcing like to like warn people about the game.
Okay. Oh, that's good. And they do ask for solicitations for the station. So they're obviously.
What time are you on? What time do you broadcast?
I'm on for like 3. I think it's like 3:15 or 3:25 to like 4.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what. He's only been in school a little over a month, and he's on the air, so he's doing a good job. I'm really proud of you. Proud of all of you, well, your brother and your sister and you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, listen, give my love to everybody and continued success, and we'll be following your career, Zane.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for being on with us. It was great to hear you. Go ahead.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's how it all begins, Don.
Yes, it does. No question about it. And you know, it just sounds like he's really enjoying himself, getting 25-30 minutes hit every day, you know, one year. It's a great start for a young man that's 50 years old. He'll have a lot of fun with that.
Well, you know, what gets me is when you hear these terms. I know, Frank, you hear the same thing because you got grandchildren there, like Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And
Your grandson's graduated right along the line. He started out with you very early. And now most people don't realize that this show is done not just on Wednesday night with us, but it's also done throughout the rest of the week. And your grandson and your youngster get very much involved in it, Frank.
Yeah, we have an all hair program that the boys do. It's 50s, 60s, and 80s music. And then they have another genre. They do sometimes they'll do heavy metal. In fact, we're going to get Zane hooked up with the boys, and they can talk and see how they can work it out, if he wants to join their group. And, talking about joining, we have a young man that's an outstanding voice in the city of Philadelphia, and a big man no matter where he goes. Mr. Tom Lemaine is with us.
Thomas, nice to have you with us. As always, you're following Roger's grandson. I'll tell you, we're really getting old, Tommy. We're following grandchildren now. Nice to have you with us.
I do have a tough time. I skip a whole generation. When I see some guys in the police department or the fire department in Atlantic City, I said, you know, your dad and my dad were good friends. And they'll tell me, no, you mean my grandfather. I just jump right over a generation.
Well, Tommy, a lot of things going on. We're obviously talking a lot of baseball tonight, a lot about the Philadelphia Phillies. You've worked with the Philadelphia Sports Department for such a long period of time, radio and television. And we went with the Flyers because you're every single game for the Flyers. But let's go to the playoffs now and see what your viewpoint is of the St. Louis Cardinals, Philadelphia Phillies, three-game series at Busch, nothing at Citizens Bank Park.
Well, it's better than the one and done thing they had last year, but
right.
You know, I have no problem with that. I mean, the Cardinals earned the three home games, and you know, the Phillies earned to be in the playoffs. So that's where it stands, and I'm good with that. And as is the case most of the time when you're talking about playoffs, who's got the best pitchers, and who's going to have the best pitchers at this time? I think it seems like Philly's two number one and two starters are peaking at the right time. Nola almost throws a perfect game the other night, and it's all about pitching. But you know, for a while there, it was a case of the Phillies having to outscore the other team. But the what they call the daycare came in, which is all the young kids, and they've kind of plugged the holes, believe it or not, and have taken on what normally is take responsibility that's taken on by veterans. And several times during the season, the Phillies were able to start an entire infield of all farm guys who came up through the farm system. That's a pretty good accomplishment right there. And you know, who is playing better baseball than Realmuto? I mean, he throws out everybody who tries to steal, and he himself is perfect stealing base. That's unheard of for a catcher. And it's a big plus for the team.
Roger?
As you can tell him at a basketball game, the Sixers are playing the Cleveland Cavaliers in a preseason game tonight.
How are the Sixers looking, Tom?
Well, they only played the starters for about 15 minutes, and they're all sitting down now. However, they did give up 60 points in the first half. You're not going to win too many games doing that. And now the scrubs are in there. But I still think the Sixers are the team to beat in the East. I think Milwaukee is just about flatlined. There's a lot of drama going on in Boston now. To think, you know, Philadelphia had drama last year, but I think they're over that. And I think the Sixers picked up a real big key piece in P.J. Tucker. I mean, I always said, boy, if the Sixers can have this guy, he's a difference maker. And Harrell is now the backup for Embiid. Harrell's probably the best backup guy the Sixers have had, you know, over the last couple of years to back up Embiid. And, you know, the team I'm looking at out here right now, I think it's a team to beat. But the other team I'm looking at, Cleveland Cavaliers, don't count them out. I think they improved their record last year by 25 games, and I can see them improving their record this year by maybe another 5 or 10 games. And right now I'm looking at – they're all sitting down now, but there are three all-star guards playing in this game. And, you know, when it comes to an all-star team, the biggest competition probably is at guard. But you got Damian Lillard, you got Garland, and you got Tyrese Maxey. You know, I'll tell you what, you're picking up, you're making a choice of any one of those three guys. It's pretty much a toss.
Well, I still think there's a lot of uncertainty in Brooklyn, too. Brooklyn has a lot of talent, if you look at it on paper, whether they're going to be able to put it all together or not, and whether everybody's going to be able to play both home and away and finally get over the difficulty they've had with Nash and with the general manager. I think Brooklyn will be heard of before the season's over.
Yes, and I think Ben Simmons will be a difference maker. I think he's going to have a breakout year this year. He's got all his mental problems squared away. Even if he doesn't shoot, he's still going to put up triple doubles like he did when he was here in Philadelphia. And I think other than that, Don, you're right. Brooklyn Nets are just about the same team they were last year. There's one
team, right.
Ben Simmons. and of course, you know, a healthy KD. It's a very competitive division, but I think the Sixers are going to be right in there in the team.
Roger?
Let's get over to ice hockey, Tom. Flyers up and down a little bit during the preseason, and opening night, I think, is the a couple of nights, right, this weekend? Is it?
Yep. Yes.
And how do they look at right. How do they look overall? I mean, with the new coach, Tortorella, do you think that they will really turn it around and be a surprise team or not?
Well, they got to be better. They can't be any worse. But right now, I can't – they're having trouble scoring. I mean, there is a 2-1, 3-2, 1-0. But, you know, they don't have a sniper. I was talking to Paul Holmgren last night. And I said, Paul, how many years have we been trying to get a sniper on this team? And we agreed there might be, Tibbett seems to be the guy that is probably the best shot on the team. There's too many guys out right now. They haven't played. Farabee, Couturier, and the two goalies, Felix Sandstrom and Hart, have not played. And Farabee is injured. But Cam Atkinson hasn't played the preseason. So there's a half a dozen pretty good names that, you know, a good part of these guys were out last year. I really am doubtful that Sean Couturier will play again. I know that Ellis, the big defenseman, they went out and set it up again. He will not play again. But, you know, you're going to count on the young kids once again with the Flyers to take the load. You got Kevin Hayes and Scotty Lawton. Either one of those two guys will probably be the captain this year. Morgan Frost, Allison, who is a dynamo player. I listened to what Rasmus Ristolainen said when he was a free agent, and there were three or four teams, maybe four teams going after him, and the price was the same on all four teams, like $5.5 million. And he chose Philadelphia because he said, getting back to what you just mentioned, he thinks the Flyers are the one team that can make the big turnaround. And that's why he decided to sign with Philadelphia. And, Rasmus Ristolainen is not an analytics. He's not going to fill the scorecard on analytics. But he is a force on the ice. When he's on the ice, other players are looking out for him. And when you're looking out for a guy looking for a guy over your shoulder, that affects the way you play. And I always liked Rasmus. I may be the only guy in Philly left. He does. I'm glad he's on the team. Bye, D. I'm just sitting next to D. Lineham here. And he chose to play for Philadelphia. So in answer to your question, Rod, yeah, they can make the biggest turnaround of any team. However, they're in a division. I mean, I can't believe the Islanders played as bad as they did last year. So they're going to be a team. They played the Flyers last night here, and they're too good a team to have the kind of record they had last year.
I was just going to say, let me interrupt for a minute, Tommy, because you're talking about the team, and I was going to jump right on when you finished talking about the Flyers, because I think the Islanders, who did so well 2 years ago and then died a Woodpecker's death, but they played, remember, the first 12, 13 games of the season last year in a neutral zone. They had no stadium to play in. And they've already signed Barzal for what, $73.2 million. So they're moving forward by spending money, and they're going to be a tough team to beat.
I believe so. I really do. They looked good to me last night.
$73 million, Tommy. $73 million.
Well, and he didn't even play last night. Anyway, I just like I said. The Islanders were too good to have the record they had last year. And the Rangers are a very much improved team. I think the change in coach made a difference here. And, you know, it's a very competitive division they're in.
Right. Roger?
What about Carter Hart? Do you think that he'll be okay? I think he will. I think if he gets some help, I think he's really a good goalie. Are you with me on that?
I am. But they do have a good – I mean, I like the way Felix Sandstrom has played as backup. He's looking pretty good.
Did they shore the defense, Tommy? Did they shore the defense?
Well, with Rasmus and yeah, if York – I mean, the coach has a lot of confidence in Cam York.
Okay.
He won a couple of years ago. But I think, you know, they got to score, and the Flyers are not scoring. I mean, they don't have a guy who can go in there and get you the goal they need when they need it. And, you know, when you have Couturier out and Farabee out, you know, there's two guys who, you know, Farabee was the best scorer on the team. I mean, they got to score, and you're not going to win games scoring one or two goals a game. Not in this league anyway.
The Lightning just went through the motions to start too. They lost their first three, didn't score any goals. But you know, when the season starts, they're going to be ready to play.
Yeah, they always are. Yeah. And they just said that for a lot of people. But Philadelphia is there's a lot of question marks, and the big ones are, to me anyway, who's going to score the goal? I mean, a couple of years ago, and I was pretty close to this last year, but 2 years ago, the Flyers led the league in shots taken and also led the league in shots made, lost shots made. So they took most shots and made the lead. And that's they're getting the shots, but they're not putting them on the net. And you need a guy who's a sniper, you know, who's going to take a shot or not. You're not going to hear wide, high, off the post, you're going to hear in the net. And right now, you know, the Flyers need that kind of guy. And until they get a guy like that, they're not going to score. They're just a poor scoring team.
Roger?
You know, I was just thinking about on a lighter subject, not involved in sports, but when we were talking earlier about, Meyer and these different people, Tom, that get recycled in TV. They were talking about on the morning show, I guess it was this morning, that I guess yesterday, last night, the two meteorologists for competing stations had the same dress on. So it's amazing how different subjects have infiltrated the sports talk business.
That's a good reason why I'm not there anymore.
Tom, let's go back to the NBA for NBA for a minute, because I just believe that they have a stained They have a stained product. I mean, we talked about the four or five teams that look like they're going to be really competitive this year, going from Brooklyn to whatever team you want, Boston, Philadelphia, whatever. But is the sport, is the NBA going to be able to recapture the imagination of a sports fan again? They've just lost the game.
Well, you know, the players are, you know, the inmates are ruling the asylum. And, you know, that's what the problem is. You know, you can't latch on to a player anymore because he demands, you know, well, I put it this way. You know, Philadelphia Flyers, everybody here thought they should have made every effort. Arguably the best player in hockey, Johnny Gaudreau. He's from here. He would be an instant star, and they didn't get him. But getting back to your point, Don, when LeBron James wants to play somewhere, he plays there. And when he wants players to play with him, he gets them. Tom Brady, when he wants to play somewhere, he goes where he wants to play, and he brings players along with him to play there. Bryce Harper wanted to play in Philadelphia. He played in Philadelphia. I mean, this is the only case, Johnny Gaudreau I'm talking about, where the number one player in the league, for the most part, wants to play in a town and is not able to do so. I know the cap space and all that. The Flyers should have made every possible way to get Johnny Gaudreau. And they didn't, and I think Johnny Gaudreau is going to mean 5,000 or 8,000 more fans in the seats every night. And God knows that's what the Flyers need, because their attendance is way down.
Yeah, they need to get people in the seats, no doubt.
Well, Tommy, we'll periodically go back and forth with you every few weeks, and you can update the Flyers as well as the National Hockey League. You see all the games. We don't. I see a number of them here, of course, in Tampa with the Lightning, but I don't get a chance to see the Flyers like I used to. So we'll cover the Flyers, we'll cover the Lightning, we'll cover the National Hockey League, and we don't really have a great deal of interest other than the Magic, and they're a few miles away from us. So the NBA does not get a lot of coverage down here in Sarasota and Tampa, to tell you the truth. Thank you very much, Tommy, and we'll do it again in a few weeks.
Okay,
Tom,
Bye.
Have a great
Thanks,
day,
Tom.
Great week. Take care.
Thank you.
Stay trip home, Tom.
All right, I think Frank said Steve was ready. Is that correct, Frank?
No, Doug is ready.
Oh, Doug is ready. Oh, okay.
Doug is ready. That's great.
Well, Doug, I'm glad Doug is I'm very, very happy that he's coming out of his shell to talk to us after that game on Sunday. He had to go to sleep with stars in his eyes and wake up with something else. Doug, what's going on down there in Baltimore, Washington?
Right. Well, I told Frank, I said, it's finally not raining here. And, you know, it's that hurricane that just blew up here has just made a mess, you know, all across from Florida all the way up. So, you know, nice day today.
Won a game today. Baltimore won a game today.
Yeah, they won the first one. They lost the second one. But, you know, most of the guys they gave rest to the second game. Mullins didn't play. Rutschman didn't play. Mountcastle didn't play. You know, so I think, you know, they exceeded all expectations this year. You know, having a winning season for the first time in, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, whatever it's been.
Right.
So, you know, it was a fun year. It was good for them to, you know, play some good baseball and finally put a decent product on the field for the fans. And I think, you know, gosh, they were wrapping up the game already talking about going to Sarasota for spring training. So I think there's some optimism and hope looking forward. You know, by and large, the last 5 years, if you're an Oriole fan, you've turned the Orioles off at this point, or long before this point, and we're rooting for the Ravens. And it was nice to watch them play from start to finish, you know, all 162 games. It was great.
One point from the Ravens. I only saw the highlights, so I didn't see the game because it wasn't telecast down here in Florida. But I did see Harbaugh's explanation. I don't know that I understood it exactly for not kicking the field goal. What was the observation of the press in Baltimore when he decided not to kick the field goal and wound up losing the game?
Well, I think I used a choice four-letter word as I was watching it. In my living room, I just, you know, you're a hero, obviously, if you scored the touchdown there. And I think his explanation was surrounding, you know, the point of, you know, basically the Bills are a good football team. And if we score a touchdown there, you know, there's a real good chance if for some reason the Bills score, we can get it into overtime. And I don't know, he may have mentioned something about analytics or something of that nature, but, you know, it's the same song and dance as last year when how many times did he go for two-point conversions to, you know, win the game outright? And I don't know. I guess as a fan, you get all the way down there, and it's unfortunate you don't score a touchdown, but I feel like you have to come away with 3 points. And, you know.
You didn't even come close to scoring a touchdown. It wasn't even – well, I mean, it wasn't even –
well, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it's – Lamar rolled out to the right and kind of got hemmed up there and just threw it up for grabs and
right
was probably just a little bit, you know, his if he would have been maybe just a smidge sooner, or if you actually watched the play, that last play back, there was a guy to his left that was wide open that he couldn't see because he was moving to his right. Unfortunately, that was an easy touchdown. But again, as a fan, I think it's grown tiresome to take this riverboat approach to all these situations of, you know, trying to win games outright and control what you can control. And I think that, I mean, if their defense has struggled, I think, obviously, in their two losses, giving up points to the Dolphins and to the Bills, respectively. But you go up 3 points there, you kick it off, and you take your chances with your defense to bend, not break, and, you know, make them drive down. And I think the same rule applies. If they kick a field goal, you go into overtime.
Right.
You know, so it's disappointing. I mean, they looked so good in that first half. And, you know, as a fan, I think you're watching that and really liking the fact that the Bills are really a good football team and that we're, you know, going into the locker room with a 20-3 and, you know, have a chance to, you know, come back and impose your will upon them and hopefully, you know, win a football game. And it just didn't happen. And I don't know if there's growing pains with their defensive coordinator that's the brand new guy, or whether this is still a concept of injuries that are plaguing them. They've lost already several people from their, you know, from their starting squad. So it's, I mean, thankfully the Ravens play the fourth place schedule, which, you know, means they play the Jags, the Giants. They already beat the Jets. I mean, some of these teams, hopefully that they can win, you know, thus far, you know, they're 2-2. And I think that we'll see this weekend when they play the Bengals. Joe Burrow hasn't looked real good this year, but he has a multitude of options to throw the football to and add Joe Mixon in there. And they're pretty good offense and ones, you know, that we've struggled with in terms of being able to cover. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase is such a good wide receiver, and T. Higgins and Boyd are, just, you know, what's the tight end that used to be on the Ravens? Can't think of his name, but he has so many options to throw to him, and the only good part is his offensive line hasn't done a very good job protecting him. But again, that's not a strength of the Ravens as far as getting to the quarterback. So, you know, if you put the onus on our secondary to cover for too long, I think we're going to have a problem again. And you know, the whole division looks pretty daggone weak. I mean, the Steelers don't look very good. The Browns are an average football team. So it's up for grabs. And I think that, you know, if we keep winning the games we're supposed to win, at the end of the day, I think we have a chance. So we'll see.
Roger?
Hey, Doug, a couple of things. Number one, you've just made the point I was thinking about this. The Steelers do not look like the normal Steelers from what I've seen. And I don't know whether they'll turn it around or whether this is just going to be one of those years. I remember Bill Cowher had one. And then, what, the next year or 2 years, they won the Super Bowl. So Right. That organization is really strong. We were talking to Bill Warrendell earlier, and you mentioned about the Ravens playing Jacksonville. Don't count Jacksonville out.
Right.
And that's Bill and I feel the same way. They are really, I think, they are going to be the surprise team, in that, especially in that division. But the other thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, I saw Harbaugh's press conference. Didn't he bring up the analytics situation in that press conference about why, and that was, Don, to your question about the field goal. Go ahead.
Yeah. I didn't watch. I mean, it was circulated. I saw, you know, pieces, parts of it, but he did mention the analytics concept in there. I don't know what was fully said, but I mean, I don't know whether that was supportive of his decision and with regard to the fact that it didn't work, and that's what, you know, he's gonna, you know, rest himself upon or not. You know, in many cases, when you're managing a football game like that, I think a lot of it comes down to just pure gut feeling. I mean, I think that he's pretty locked in with Lamar as his quarterback, and likes his confidence and his abilities to make plays when it counts, particularly, you know, the fourth and shorts that he tames in critical situations where, you know, maybe it's not the best of ideas with regard to where you are on the field and maybe a short field that you would give him if you don't make it. You know, those two-point conversions that he talked about, you know, last year, obviously with the banged-up squad, I think he was hoping to just make one play and ride off into the sunset, knowing that his team was, you know, not in the best of positions with their overall health and ability to field, you know, players. You know, to your point, I think the Steelers are going to go with their rookie quarterback. I think that they have some problems offensively. They've lost T.J. Watt, which is a huge loss. You know, talking about Jacksonville, they've had an infusion of some young talent with the draft and some off-season maneuvers they've made. So they're definitely a better football team this year than
– And the coach.
Well, and I also think –
And their quarterback, their quarterback's got a year under his belt.
Yeah, I mean, you're
right.
Early on in the season with four games played, I think, you know, you're looking for some different headlines. I think that, you know, the Eagles are 4-0 and – No, you can say what you want to about maybe how they've won or who they've played or whatever, but they're 4-0. The Lions have to be a surprise in terms of the amount of points they're scoring and what their offense looks like. You know, you could probably look the other way and say, you know, the Bengals are, you know, a disappointment, you know, playing in the Super Bowl last year. I think Arizona's looked pretty pathetic so far. You know, so, I mean, it's early.
We're going to find out this weekend. We're going to find out about Arizona this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eagles at two this weekend.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, it takes several weeks, you know, before you start talking about, you know, who's separating themselves. You know, you look at the Commanders don't look very good. The Giants are the Giants. They just, you know, that's a, you know, Dak Prescott's still out. The Cowboys are trying to hold their head above water. I mean, I think you've got a lot of weaker divisions that, you know, the Falcons don't look very good. You know, there's the Saints don't look very good. Houston doesn't look very, I mean, there's, you know, in a couple of weeks, I think you'll see some of the cream start to rise to the top with people figuring out where they are in their divisions and how they're playing. And, you know, you've had a multitude of injuries, you know, already, guys going down or missing time. You'll see it Thursday night when you have the Colts. You know, Taylor's such a good running back, and, you know, he's not going to play. Russell Wilson doesn't look super comfortable in a Broncos jersey in terms of what I've seen. And they lost their starting running back, Javonte Williams, torn ACL. So, I mean, there's a lot of storylines, I think, that will present themselves. Injuries always are one of them. You know, once we start
Rams got to be a little disappointing up to this moment too.
They're very disappointing so far.
Tampa Bay doesn't look that good.
No.
You know, I think you know, Tom Brady's got some off-field issues. You're hearing, you know, splattered across the news. I don't know if that's, you know, playing an effect on his on-field or not, but Tampa Bay doesn't look very good. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of parity, I think, in this year's NFL.
Well, I think they, you know, we talked about it without the, you know, exhibition season and without the pads and all the things. It takes them 4 or 5 games before a team actually gets into what they consider to be NFL football.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for the reps that a lot of these players get in practice. You know, whether you're a starter or a second stringer or whatever, you know, it's a big deal, you know, for these guys to go through their practice and their reps and to get situated with whether it's, you know, rookies that have joined the team or off-season acquisitions that are trying to gel and perform on field with timing and all these different things. So, you know, you look at the Ravens, they have a rookie center, you know, and that's one of the most important things you can talk about is the exchange between, you know, and he's calling the shots on the line in terms of, you know, which way guys are going and blocking and who's doing what. You know, there's a lot going on there. I mean, they had J.K. Dobbins looks good last week. He was explosive, but, you know, behind him isn't a whole lot with Mike Davis and Kenyon Drake. And Gus Edwards is still out. He's got a couple weeks to get himself, you know, going with practice time. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, 2-2. We'll see what happens moving forward.
Roger? Hey, Doug, you know, getting back to the Ravens defense, Wink Martindale was the defensive coordinator for Harbaugh for several years, right?
Yeah,
and
he was.
Then he was let go. Okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, am I right about that? Yeah,
that's correct.
And
he's
I want
New York.
Yeah, and he's with the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, he gets a lot of positive notoriety from the national media. And what's the story that, you know, if they're having problems with the defense, they let this guy who is considered, you know, top of the dial, so to speak, as the defensive coordinator, and they let him go.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I think Martindale, I believe, is a pretty well-respected coach around the league for how he carries himself. He's a pretty old-school, stoic kind of guy that's, you know, put some dirt on it and get back in the game kind of rough and tumble guy that's going to tell you, you know, exactly what he's thinking and probably not mince very many words in the process. I think he, the guys that play defense for him like him as, you know, a coach. You know, unfortunately, I think you see from time to time, you know, whether it's a political move or a scapegoat, if you will, the Ravens lost, you know, all those games last year. And I think, you know, I don't know how that stuff gets handed down from Bisciotti to whomever that comes to Harbaugh that says, "Hey, look, man, somebody's got to go. You know, we need to make a change here." And it was either going to be Roman or Martindale. You know, and I think that the offense probably played better than the defense, so it looked like Martindale was out. I think Harbaugh. I don't know if it's just him, but every head coach has to have a certain chip on their shoulder that, you know, that makes them, you know, kind of own their football team and, you know, it's possible their personalities may have clashed, you know, in terms of how they wanted to set up different schemes or call plays or do whatever. And I guess maybe they had their run and that was enough. And Martindale was, you know, expendable. And, you know, he brings this guy in that coached for his brother at University of Michigan. And he, you know, I mean, a lot of that was talent-based. He had Ajabo and Hutchinson that were both potential. One was, you know, obviously a high first round pick. Ajabo probably would have been, who landed with the Ravens, who is hurt. But, you know, I think it's going to take a couple years to get the right players on the field to fit his scheme. I think Martindale was more of a blitz heavy kind of a defensive minded coach that, you know, we don't have any pass rushers, so he had to create something through blitzes. And unfortunately that left a lot of our secondary on an island. And you know, either way you draw it up, you're going to have the right personnel on the field. I mean, the Ravens haven't had a, you know, bona fide pass rusher since Terrell Suggs. How many years ago was that? So, you know, they're struggling to find one now, and they just can't get to the quarterback.
Well, the interesting part about it is, Doug, that the two games that they've lost, this one last week against the Bills, that, you know, as you said, you go in the locker room at halftime, you think you got a pretty secure game against one of the better teams in the league. And then 2 weeks before that, you have a secure lead again, and you come up short at the wire. You know, that's got to be a little hard. That's a hard bullet to bite.
I would agree. And again, I think you're seeing, at least what I saw in the Dolphins game, was a lot of blown coverages, you know, where they were playing zones that, you know, somebody thought he had help behind him and he didn't, and he let the guy go. And that's where you saw Tua kind of throw it over the top.
Well, what did he throw for? 468 or 465 in that game?
Far too much. You know, Tyreek Hill is just, he's such a good wide receiver, but he's so fast and he's elusive, and you just can't let him get past you because, you can't throw it over that guy's head. You look at the Bills and Josh Allen. I mean, he's an MVP candidate every year. You know, he can do it with his feet and make plays, you know, in the pocket. He can get out of the pocket and run, and he's a big guy and he's tough. And Patrick Queen just looks stinking lost on the field. You got Peters and Humphrey coming back from injuries. You have, you know, the new draft pick, Kyle Hamilton. I mean, there's, you know, they just don't, they're not a cohesive unit yet. And I think it's going to take some time to get that gelled, you know. So,
Roger?
Well, you know, we were talking about earlier about the coaching and, pardon me, and I was thinking about, I'm a big Bills fan. I really think Sean McDermott's a great coach. And I was thinking back, and, of course, Don, you'd remember this too, because you would be at games. It was Sean McDermott when Jim Johnson was the defensive coordinator. Steve Spagnuolo was the linebacker coach. And then you had some others. Ron Rivera was in that group and everything. But Sean McDermott was the guy that sent in the defensive callings from Jim Johnson. And, all part of the Andy Reid tree. But as I recall, Harbaugh, John, was Andy made the defensive backfield coach to get him, give him some exposure away from the special teams coordinator. And I just look, I mean, at the success that they've had, but the I think that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right. And I really think they made a mistake with Martindale. I really do. And I think they're paying the price.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can tell you, Harbaugh's a pretty control-oriented guy, and it's kind of a his way or the highway mentality. I think it makes sense that he, you know, on one hand would eliminate.
Ego about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think that, you know, I think he had a personality clash with Martindale, and I think they kind of both mutually agreed that they should part ways, and it makes sense that he would go out and get a college defensive coordinator that he can, you know, pull some puppet strings on and have him seat himself into a position that's, you know, not going to, you know, hurt his ego in the process. I think the next guy you're looking at is Roman. I mean, you know, I think that it's going to be a similar situation with him. If things don't work out this year, I think he's your next guy to go.
And then the next guy will be John Harbaugh.
Well, I mean, that's unfortunately the way it plays out at different points. But
yeah.
I think you're gonna vote everybody else off the island before you vote yourself off, you know. So.
Well, yeah. Well, I can remember with the Falcons a number of years ago when I was over there all the time and was doing the show, local shows. It was interesting because I got to know several of the players. I mean, you know, pretty well where you could have a one-on-one and they knew it wasn't going to go any further. But what amazed me was they let a defensive coordinator go and he wound up, you know, a couple other places, but it was the players and what they didn't like about him was his language. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking of the old days, okay? You
right.
know, when Don and Frank and I grew up, a language, Vince Lombardi mm-hmm. language,
right.
and that's what it was. That was causing the undercurrent in the mm-hmm. In the defensive end of the locker room.
But
believe
right,
it or not,
when you and I grew up, you were lucky if you had 5 coaches, not 12 or 13.
That's true. Right. You're right. Yeah, you're exactly right. But I just thought, you know, it's funny, and I guess, and this is a few years ago now, but it also shows you the impact. The guy was doing a good job, and he, like I said, he wound up. That's why I'm not going through his name or anything, but mm-hmm. he wound up with other jobs. But that's what the players would talk about privately about him.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's you know guys that are out there that
we are out of time. Doug, thank you very much. Billy Wardell, of course, thank you. All the guests we had this evening, great show, a lot of fun. And we'll do it all again next week, and we'll turn it all over to the director, Frank Carroll. Go to it.
Ladies and gentlemen,
thanks as always,
programs
Frank.
Brought to you each.
God bless.
Thank you, sir. These programs are brought to you each and every day of the week. And grateful appreciation for the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women police and fire services. When you're out there and you see the uniform, please let them know that you know they're there. These are very tough times, all our brothers out there. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Polkett, Sergeant Thomas Bainier, Patrolman David Curtis, Deputy Mike Harcroft, Deputy Blaine Lane, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Bainier, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henler, Sergeant Thomas Wilson, Valley County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris Levig, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Manoffo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Arda Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Chief Al Ogle, Longboat Police Department, and Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, but sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the palm of his hand. Good night. God bless, and please be careful out there.
Shemalek ma'ilama Shemahezahilma Sona shenevoratfet Hakuig again ma'ilama I'm proud and kind. spirit and with mind afraid, so I wish him strength and length of days.
All units be advised, 1999's failure to respond. End of watch. May God rest his soul.
But we love you and we miss you.